Welcome to the podcast for Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. This is the message from Sunday, July 5th, 2015, given by Lee Younger from Luke chapter 7.
We're going to be in the book of Luke in chapter 7. So if you have a Bible or some type of device that has an app for a Bible, go ahead and turn or navigate there. And we'll catch up to that in just a few minutes. You know, when I was in the eighth grade, that was back when the middle school was called the junior high. Some of you remember that in this town. I went to Robertsville Junior High School, and in the eighth grade they had a dance that, which is a generous term for what that event was. It was the eighth and ninth grade superlative dance. This is when the ninth grade was still at the junior high. And so a bunch of my friends and I, we all thought, all right, we're eighth graders. They're having the eighth, ninth grade superlative dance. Let's go check this thing out. And we were, you know, we didn't know anything about dancing. And if you've ever been to a middle school or a junior high dance, you know that this is the most awkward event in human history. If you walk into the gym, you know, music is playing. And actually, our superlative was at the old Oak Ridge Armory over there by like the girls' club on the turnpike. And we walked into the armory and there were two distinct crowds of people. They were completely segregated by gender. And there was an uncrossable chasm. There was an abyss in between these two piles of people. And here's what it looked like. All of the girls standing in a pile, whispering to each other and looking at boys. And all of the guys just like standing at the snack bar and just eating Oreos and Vienna fingers and having punch. And nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew how to cross the uncrossable divide and actually initiate a dance. Here's one problem. We didn't know how to dance. We didn't know anything about dancing. We were the people who show up to a dance without knowing what dancing is. Once somebody finally did cross the divide about an hour into this event, you know, then they start playing the slow jams, which at that time, and some of you will remember who were there in the 90s, that it was basically at an eighth grade superlative, that was every song off of the Bodyguard soundtrack with Whitney Houston. And so they're playing all the tracks from the Bodyguard soundtrack, and the only dance move that we knew was the hands on hips sway. That was it. Just keep it right here. Just that's all we had was a slow dance. The awkward hands on hips sway. That was it. Now, I remember I was even more awkward than most of the middle schoolers at this dance because I was in that really weird stage of development where I was 5'7" with a size 12 shoe, and I looked kind of like Ronald McDonald everywhere I went. And I had these just gigantic boats on the end of my legs. And to make it even worse, everybody's fashion decisions were still being influenced by the Cuba Gooding Jr. movie, Boys in the Hood. And therefore, I showed up at the eighth grade superlative with a purple silk shirt on, just a button up, long sleeve, top button buttons, like I was Cuba Gooding Jr. in Boys in the Hood. And so, not only did I look like Ronald McDonald, I also looked like the Joker from Batman. And friends, those are two clowns that don't belong at the eighth grade superlative. But there I was. And we didn't know how to dance. We didn't know anything about this. And I didn't know how to dance all the way through school, all the way through junior and senior prom, which I still hold is the worst event in our society. And I didn't know what to do at that thing either. I didn't know how to dance until I was a junior in college. When I was a junior in college, I had transferred to the University of Tennessee Tech in Cookeville. And Christy informed me that I would be signing up for a class called ballroom dance. And I was like, why am I signing up for ballroom dance? And she was like, because there's going to be dancing at my wedding. And we had just gotten engaged. And she was like, there will be dancing there. That's what's going to happen. And you, sir, are going to know how to do it. And I'm like, yes, ma'am, sign me up. You know, I show up at the Memorial Gym at Tennessee Tech for the first day of ballroom dance class. And I had no idea anything about this. But this lady walks in and she was She was like this really energetic, really loud, really boisterous, really fun, like white-haired hippie lady who just loved ballroom dance more than anything. And she walked in there with like a DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince boombox. And she like sets the thing down. And this other guy walks in with her who was like much younger, really good looking. He looked like a matador, this guy. And like she turns on the music and bam, they just start dancing. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, if you don't know anything about dancing and you watch somebody that's like passionate about ballroom dance, y'all, it's like magic. I mean, like, he just touches his hand a little bit and she knows where to move. She's like spinning and twirling and everything. Just a little pressure on the small of her back and she's like bouncing around all over the place. He's catching her. And I'm thinking, this lady, I mean, you know, she's got all this white hair tied up, but she's flying all over the place. I mean, she's just, they're gliding around the floor. They get done and we burst into applause like we've just watched the Super Bowl. It was amazing. It was magic. And she was like, by the end of this semester, you will be able to do this. And I was like, president, right here. Just let her run. This woman is amazing. We were all sold. We would follow her into battle, right? And so we did. We showed up every day at class and we learned. We learned like, y'all, your boy learned the waltz. I learned the foxtrot, Charleston. I learned the rumba, cha-cha. Little, you know, like a little salsa, and of course, the Lindy Hop, which is swing. And we worked hard. And at the end of the semester, our final was to have a formal dance. And I was like, uh-oh. I was like, note to self, don't wear the purple silk shirts. Luckily, I'd grown into the size 12 feet by this point. And we all got dressed up, and we go to this place, and they had rented out this hall in town. And it's amazing the difference. Eighth grade superlative, standing in the corner eating Vienna fingers, wondering how much longer until I have to do the hands on hips sway. Junior year in college, as a final in ballroom dance, loving every minute of it. Every song that came on, didn't matter what genre it was, we knew what to do. We knew the moves, we knew the passes, we were making stuff up. Here's the cool thing. When you study ballroom dance, you learn all of the, like, that's what they call them passes. So like you have like your steps and then you have the passes and that's just like the little flair stuff that you do within the steps. You learn all these things and you practice them over and over and over again so you get them down into muscle memory. So then when a song comes on, it's not that you know when you're gonna do this pass, you're just making it up. And it's this beautiful alloy of muscle memory and creativity. It's unbelievably cool. And so that was our final thing. That was our final exam, was a party, a dance party. And it was the coolest thing ever. You know, you don't show up to a place where there's gonna be dancing if you don't know the moves. Because then you're just gonna be standing there. I think that in our lives, our spiritual life, our emotional life, our psychological life. Our life, it's kind of like a dance, but it's also like a fight. We are in a fight for our faith. And I think that one of the reasons that we get discouraged, that we get confused, that we are insecure, that we are afraid, is because we show up to a fight for our faith like a middle school kid showing up at a dance. We don't know the moves. We don't know what to do. We don't have any idea how to engage this process because we haven't rehearsed it. You don't show up at a dance without knowing how to dance, without knowing the moves. You practice the moves and then you're ready to dance. You don't show up in a day where you're going to be fighting for your faith without rehearsing your faith, without knowing it. I want to show you Luke chapter 7. If you've got it, check this out. We're going to start in verse 16. Let me actually set this up before, because verse 16 is going to kind of come in on the tail end of what Jesus has just been doing. When you start Luke chapter 7, Jesus heals the servant of a Roman centurion, which, let's be honest, that's not the kind of activity that Jewish people would have been happy with him pulling off. You are healing the servant of a Gentile, and the Jewish folks in this town, they like this guy because he was trying to find out who God was and stuff. But most people are like, wait a minute, you would heal the servant of a Gentile? Not cool. Jesus was doing something for someone that most everybody else didn't care about. He cares about somebody that nobody else cares about. The next scene, we see him going into this little town called Nain, and there was a widow who had lost her only son. And Jesus walks in the middle of this funeral procession for this widow's only son. And they're carrying the young man's body out of town to go bury him. And Jesus walks up in the middle of this funeral procession, and he goes up to the mom and he says, "Why are you crying?" And then he goes up to where they're holding this, where they're holding up this boy's body, and he just says, "Get up." And the kid gets up, and it says, he gave him back to his mother. Jesus just raised somebody from the dead. When you start cruising through Luke chapter 7, you find Jesus doing something that nobody else would do. Caring about somebody nobody else would care about. And you find him doing something nobody else, doing something that nobody else could do. Raising someone from the dead. And that's where we pick up in verse 16. Check this out. "They were all filled with awe and praised God. 'A great prophet has appeared among us,' they said. 'God has come to help his people.' This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country." Verse 18 says, "John's disciples," and this is John the Baptist, "John's disciples told him about all these things. And calling two of them, he sent them to the Lord to ask, 'Are you the one who was to come? Or should we expect someone else?'" A little background on this. Luke doesn't really paint the picture for you here in chapter 7, but John the Baptist, if you remember, when we start reading in the Gospels, John the Baptist is kind of on the scene before Jesus begins his ministry. John the Baptist was a weird dude. He was a guy that, he was like a lightning bolt in the middle of a culture that was asleep. He just came out of nowhere. He lived out in the wilderness, out in the woods, out by the river. He didn't wear like normal clothes like everybody else. He just like somehow fashioned a poncho out of the skin of a camel, wrapped a leather belt around it. You're like, okay, dude. He ate bugs. That's what he did. He's just like, "I'm just going to live in the woods, eat bugs, and I'm going to wear this poncho." And like, that's this guy. And like, people would come up and show up, and he wasn't afraid to tell them anything that they needed to hear. He was like, "Hey, God is coming. And the axe is already at the tree, and he's going to be chopping people down. He's going to be burning stuff up." And everybody's like, "Whoa, take it easy, man." You know, and people are like, "Well, how do I, you know, what do I do?" And he's like, "You should get baptized. You should change the way you're living, and you should get baptized." And they're like, "Dunk me, man. Let's do this." And so he's baptizing people. He's getting people ready for the Lord to come, right? Like, soldiers would show up, and John the Baptist would look right at him, and he's like, "Hey, you, don't take more money than you should." And it's one of those things where it's like, dude, those guys could kill you, and nobody would care. I mean, Roman soldiers take you out, nobody even thinks about it a second time. But he just point his finger at him and say the thing that everybody's always been thinking, but nobody has the guts to say. At one point he starts talking about Herod, the guy that's running all of Judea, the governor over this area. He starts talking about this dude. Herod finds out about it, and he says, "What is he saying about me?" And they're saying, "Well, he's saying that you shouldn't be married to your brother's wife. Because you see, Herod liked his brother's wife, so he had his brother killed, and then he stole his brother's wife." So, I mean, yeah, it's the thing everybody's thinking. Everybody knows Herod shouldn't have his brother's wife, but John the Baptist just said it. He just said it, and he said it right in his big face. And then Herod threw him into prison. And when this picks up, John has been in prison. He's in a dungeon in Jerusalem, just sitting there, just sitting in a dungeon. This guy, his whole life had been about just giving people the message of God. He's just following God. God is using him. People are coming to him from all over the country. He's baptizing people. He's getting them ready for the Messiah. And all of a sudden, full stop, shut down. He's in a dungeon. Nothing. It's just over. His ministry's over. And he starts hearing about stuff that Jesus is doing. And he's like, "Yeah, but what about me?" I don't know about you, but I've felt like that before. I've gotten to a place where I felt like nothing's happening for me the way I want it to. And yeah, I mean, I guess maybe Jesus is doing some other stuff out there, but what about me? I'm trapped. I'm stuck. This is not good where I am. John started getting confused, I think. I think he was discouraged. I think he started doubting himself. I'm sure he did. Because who wouldn't? Who in here doesn't doubt themselves when things start going exactly the way you hope they wouldn't? And when it's like that for a long time, for months, you're just sitting in a dungeon and you're like, "What about me? What about me?" So people are talking about Jesus and they're saying, You know, he's doing this thing, he's doing that thing, he's doing this over here and that over there. And John grabs two of his guys and he says, I have a very important job for you. Go find him and ask him this question. Are you for real, dude? Are you for real? Is this it? Or was I wasting my time? And I wonder how many of us, don't raise your hand or anything, but how many of us have gotten to the point where we feel exactly that way and haven't had the guts, I'll just go ahead and say it, haven't had the guts to ask it, straight up ask it. Jesus, are you for real? Is this for real? This thing that I'm walking, this thing that I've placed my trust in, is it for real or not? Am I wasting my time? Should I be waiting on something else? Or are you legit? I've got to know. So he sends these two guys. And that's where we pick up. Verse 20. When the men came to Jesus, they said, John the Baptist sent us to you to ask, are you the one who was to come? Or should we expect someone else? At that very time, Jesus cured many who had diseases, sicknesses, and evil spirits, and gave sight to many who were blind. So he replied to the messengers, go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. I love this scene. It's so cool. It's like Jesus is doing all this stuff. These guys come up and they're like, we're from John the Baptist. And everybody else is like, whoa. Because he was a famous dude. He was a big deal. And so these guys are like, we're the emissaries of John the Baptist. And he has a question for you. And a hush falls over the crowd. Are you the one who was to come? Or should we wait for someone else? And Jesus goes, hold that thought. And then he just like starts doing his thing. He doesn't answer the question. I love that. He's just like, you sit down over there. I'm not going to deal. I'll deal with you later. And he just starts healing leprous people and healing like people's legs. And he's healing people's backs. And he's casting demons out of people. And then he comes back and he's like, now, where were we? Did you have a question? And they're like, not really. That was awesome. And he's like, yeah, go tell John what you just saw. Leprous people cured. Who wants to touch leprous people? I do. Dead people raised. Who can cure, raise to life dead people? I can. Who can fix the lame, the blind, the deaf? Who else is giving good news to the poor? Go tell him. Go tell him what you've seen and what you've heard. And so off they go. You know, I think that for so many of us, and I know this is true for me, and I'm gambling that it's true for you as well. I think if we're honest, it's super true of all of us. That when we get confused and we get beaten down and we get discouraged, when we're feeling insecure about ourselves or when we're afraid of what's coming, it's because we've forgotten who he is. We've forgotten what he does. We've forgotten what he's like. Can you imagine if in the moment of your deepest confusion, you witnessed Jesus raise a human being from the dead? This really happened, y'all. Can you imagine if in the midst of your discouragement, you watched Jesus put his hands on someone none of us would ever touch? What if you saw that heart in person? Can you imagine? Wouldn't your doubt evaporate? Wouldn't you be like, oh yeah, this is what he's like. This is who he is. Here's what I love about John the Baptist. Everybody gets discouraged. Everybody gets confused. John asked the question. This is a bold dude. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Are you the one, or are we wasting our time? So many of us have thought it. Who is willing to go to Jesus and ask it? Now, John's locked up in a prison cell. Otherwise, I think he would have gone. I think he would have gone and gotten in Jesus' face and said, are you the one, or should we be waiting on somebody else? So since he couldn't go, he says, you two go for me and go ask him. When was the last time you did that? When was the last time you cracked open the scriptures, go where Jesus is, and say to him, before I read this, I need to know, who are you? What do you do, and what are you like? That's what I need to know. What are you like? What do you do? Our life is a fight for our faith. We are fighting for it. And I think a lot of times we show up into our day and we have not rehearsed our steps. When I first started becoming a young life leader, we do this thing on once a week for high school kids. We throw them a party. It's called Club. And we sing a bunch of silly songs. We do a bunch of little skits and stuff like that just to get them laughing and get them excited. And we tell them about Jesus. And my best friend, Charlie, and I, my college roommate, we decided that like this, we were going to do this skit where we were dressing up like Irish samurais. And so we had like these giant beards, and we had like Irish accents, and we also had samurai swords. And we were going to, every single time we came out, we were going to stage a sword fight. And because Charlie is Charlie, he was like, every time we come out, the sword fight has to be different. And so we like practiced our sword fight. Like every move of our sword fight, we practiced in the backyard of mine and Christy's house. And we would do this for like 2 hours before a club. And we're just practicing the sword fight in slow motion, you know, with broomsticks and stuff. And then the day that we're like gonna have club, Charlie shows up and he had gone on Amazon and he had ordered metal, like actual samurai swords. And I was like, those are swords. And he was like, we're samurai, you know? And I was like, okay, I can't phone in the sword practice. He was like, no, we gotta have this down. I mean, y'all, we were swinging each other's heads, okay? We had all the blocks, the parries, everything down. We're changing around. Every single sword fight was different, and we had to have it down. And all of a sudden, I started remembering my moves better. I started remembering my moves better because now we're swinging swords at each other. And if I don't get this move right, I am going to be in a world of hurt. And here's the thing. I think a lot of us are showing up into our day and we don't know the moves. We're not rehearsing our faith. Is it fair for me to say that? We're not rehearsing our faith. We don't have the steps down. It's like showing up to a dance and you don't know the moves. You're not ready for the dancing part. If you're showing up in a fight for your faith every single day, you better have your moves down. And I think the way that you do this is just like John the Baptist. I think you go where Jesus is and you ask him, are you the one? Are you? Go ahead and ask him. He's big enough for that. He'll stand up to a challenge. And I think that as you go down through there and you find out where he is and you start reading and you find out what he does and what he's like, who would touch a leprous person? And you think, you know, my heart is pretty leprous. Would you touch mine heart? Who can raise people from the dead? I'm feeling dead this week. Can you raise me up? When you go there, you go to where Jesus is, and you find out what he can do and what he's like. You find out there's nobody that can do the stuff he can do, and there's nobody like him. There's no heart in this world like his. I think that's what we have to do every day. Rehearse our faith. Get the moves down. Learn how to dance. Learn how to do this. Learn how to face the confusions and the difficulties and the problems that we have. And you do this by going there and rehearsing your faith over and over again every day. Who are you? What do you do? What are you like? The coolest thing happens next. I want to show it to you. Jesus sends these guys off. You know, the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is any, this is verse 23. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. Verse 24, check this out. After John's messengers left, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. So he starts talking about John the Baptist. What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? That's what most men are like. Pliable. Just, you know, fall to the crowd. If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? Most people care about the stuff of this world. No, those who wear expensive clothes and indulge in luxury are in palaces. But what did you go to see? A prophet? Yes. I tell you, and more than a prophet, this is the one about whom it is written, I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you. And then look at this. I tell you, among those born of women, which the Greek doesn't say this, but by the way, that's all of us. Among those born of women, there is no one greater than John. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of God is greater than he is. There's a really cool thing that happens if you read this Matthew's version of this story. It says that Jesus, you know, these guys come to Jesus and they say, John wants to know, are you the one? Should we wait on somebody else? And Jesus says, hold on tight. Bam, bam, bam. All these miracles and everything. And he says, you good? And they're like, yeah. And it says, as they were walking away, Jesus began to say to the crowd, what did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? And I just have to wonder, y'all. I'm just playing the movie in my head. As they're walking away, Jesus starts talking about John the Baptist. Did they hear him? Did they hear him? I hope they did. In my mind, it goes like this. They go back to where John is, to his prison cell. And John the Baptist says, you're back. Did you find him? We found him. And he's unbelievable. Dead people are coming to life. Who can do that? He's touching leprous people. He cares about poor people. Who cares about poor people? There's nobody like him. There's nobody anywhere like him. And John's like, okay. All right. Okay, I'm good. And he says, by the way, as we were walking away, he said something else. What? He said, you're not like everybody else. And he's like, what do you mean? He said, like, you know, most people are like a reed swayed by the wind, but not you. And John is maybe like, Jesus thinks I'm brave? Yeah. Like, he said, most people care about, you know, worldly stuff, but not you. You are about God's business. Jesus thinks I'm faithful? Actually, what he actually said was that you're the one that Isaiah talked about 700 years ago. And he's like, Jesus thinks I'm part of the story? Yeah. Actually, he went on to say that you were the greatest person who has ever lived. Wow. Then he said that any of us could be even better than you. You know, and it's like, fine, I hope you are. If Jesus sees me that way, I hope you all get to be like that. Y'all, our life is a fight. It's a fight. And if you're gonna not be discouraged, you need to go where he is and you need to find out, what's he like? What's he doing? And here's the other thing. What does he think about me? And what if you find out that he says, you are my treasure. You are my favorite. You are my daughter. You are my son. I did this thing this past week where I do this sometimes. I just sent out a little email to make 20 of my friends whose walk with the Lord I really respect and love. I love to watch. And I just said, hey, do me a favor. Don't look anything up. I don't want Bible references. I just want to know off the top of your head, like, what do you love about who Jesus is? And what do you love about what he says about you? Go. Don't even think about it. Just go. Don't hesitate. And I got back some of the coolest stuff. Cool stuff from people who are rehearsing their faith. He wants to be my friend. His standard of measurement on how I'm doing is completely different than the world's. It's not about if I'm successful or ambitious or funny. He loves me how I am. One person said he doesn't judge me. One person said that he never changes. He sees me as righteous. By the way, every single thing that I got from every single person is an actual Bible verse. These are people who are going to the scriptures and they're finding out who he is, what he's like, and how he feels about them. They're rehearsing the steps. They're learning to dance. They're learning to fight. This person said, he keeps my tears in a bottle. He's sad when I'm sad. He cares about the things I care about. He chose me. Why me? And when I looked at this person's, I'm like, yeah, why you? I love you, but that's a really good point. One person said, he will never give up on me. One person said, he definitely wants better for me than I do. Everything he does in my life is intentional. He delights in me so much that he sings over me. That's in there, y'all. I'm not an accident or part of some random trajectory of the universe. I am his prize, one person said. He understands me and loves me when no one else does. He remembers that I am dust and loves me through that. He found me worth dying for. He's patient with me. I don't have to prove anything to him. He doesn't respond to my sin the way the world does. I love his heart for people, one person said, specifically people who are hurting and scared or lonely. One person said he is gentle. He doesn't snuff out someone barely smoldering or break off those who are hanging on by a thread. He is near to the brokenhearted. You got to go there to find this stuff out, by the way. One person said he has a short memory with us, even though he knows everything that's ever happened or ever will happen. How is that even possible? When I mess up, he knows it, but he continues to love me and he forgets it. He tells us that he's the light of the world and he has already overcome the world. Jesus has never abandoned me. One person said, I am his daughter. Because of his promises, I am forever his. He loves me. I don't surprise him by my achievements or mistakes, and I'll never be kicked out of his family. One person said, this was so cool. He always finds a way out. When I think a situation looks hopeless and I can only see two options, he always finds the most creative and gracious third option. You know, like on the cross, either you get down and prove you're God or you just die. No, he has a third option. But it works that way in my life too. One person answered the question really sweetly and then like with a big fat paragraph. And in the process of answering the question, I'm not making this up, this person said, by the way, as I'm writing this, it's weird how pausing to take a second to remember who he promises to be and who he promises I am can encourage you and fill you. Your life is a fight for your faith. We need to practice our steps. You don't show up at a dance without knowing how to dance. You practice the steps. I think a lot of people in my family and a lot of my friends who knew me when I was growing up, I think they were really, really shocked when on August 3rd, almost 14 years ago, at the Museum of Appalachia on the porch there, the back porch, our wedding ceremony was done and our DJ put on They Can't Take That Away From Me, the Ella Fitzgerald recording. And Christy and I busted out a rumba that was so professional. I mean, people were like, I had friends that were like, I've known you my entire life. Where did this come from? And the thing is, after the rumba was over, they put on a swing. We didn't miss a beat. Whatever they put on, we did it. We had the steps. We had the passes. It was this beautiful alloy, this beautiful combination of muscle memory, but creativity, just passion and love, all that stuff. It was dancing. We were dancing. And for some people who didn't know how to dance, I guarantee you it looked like magic. That's why we still love going to wedding receptions, because we still remember how to dance. Your job is to get up and learn the steps. Go to Jesus. Find out, who are you? What do you like? What do you do? And how do you feel about me? If you're going to fight, you got to learn the moves. If you're going to dance, you got to learn the steps. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, the way you feel about us, it's unbelievable. The way you are, the way you care, the heart that you have for people we wouldn't even think twice about. The things you can do that no one else can do. There's no one like you. Right now, Lord Jesus, I want to lift up folks in this room who are discouraged and feel like they're trapped in a dungeon. Maybe even folks who feel like, yeah, maybe he's doing something for somebody else, but he's not doing anything for me. And I pray that you would help them to rehearse their faith, to practice their steps, to get it down, stone cold down. Help us to learn how to walk. Help us to learn how to dance, how to fight. Give us a heart to every single, not to go into a single day without it, but to every single day come and find you and challenge you. Who are you? What are you like? And how do you feel about me? It's in your wonderful name that we pray. Amen.
find out more about Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, visit our website at c3oakridge.org. Again, that's c3oakridge.org.